This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. So glad to have you with us, and I hope your 2018 is off to a great start. Well, on today's show, we're going to take a look back again at the 2017 Values Voter Summit, which brought together so many excellent views and opinions to thousands of activists in Washington, D.C., representing 48 states. Now, one of the topics that we addressed was national security. And of course, that remains a concern for a lot of Americans. Shortly, we'll hear from retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and his address at the Values Voter Summit. Then our own retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, my favorite general. He serves as Family Research Council's Executive Vice President and was one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. He led a panel of discussion that includes Frank Gaffney, founder, president, and CEO of the Center for Security Policy, a nonprofit, nonpartisan educational corporation established back in 1988. Also, Kamal Saleem, from a large Sunni Muslim family in the heart of the Middle East, ultimately recruited by the Muslim Brotherhood, and now a born-again Christian, author, and Christian leader. That's coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. By the way, if you would like to check out any of the archived programs of Washington Watch, they're all kept at TonyPerkins.com. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, at the Values Voter Summit, retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North said that if you're going to seize the day, it's important to have an understanding of situational awareness. Listen now is Colonel Oliver North, New York Times best-selling author and former national security aide under President Ronald Reagan, discusses our nation's national security and foreign policy positions.
Allow me to, if you will, to focus on why we believers need to be engaged and situationally aware on national security issues. First, Iran. The president mentioned here this morning that he was going to address that this afternoon, so I got to watch him twice today as I was sitting over in the Fox Bureau. He ordered an Iran policy review back in April. That's not going to be mentioned by his critics, but that's when he started it. He pointed out that the present law requires him or any president to certify every 90 days on Iranian compliance. Yeah. Iranian compliance with the Obama administration's so-called Joint Comprehensive, it's a mouthful, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. That's what John Kerry didn't call it, JCPOA. He called it the Iran deal, the deal. You won't find that mentioned anywhere in the Constitution, like treaties and things like that. Yes, this was a deal. He also requires that the president certify to Congress that it's in our national interest to keep it. The Iranian nuke deal is worse for the American people than Obamacare. They will both kill you. It's just a matter of time and how many. And that's what it is. This afternoon, after enumerating a lengthy bill of particulars, President Trump announced a new strategy to stop appeasing what he appropriately called the rogue regime in Iran. He said he's not going to recertify that Iran is in compliance. He tipped that off when he was here today. And he did exactly what he said he was going to do. I know this surprises so many people in the media business. It's a shock. We didn't know he was going to do that. Well, he also gave Congress 60 days to amend and replace, not repeal and replace, amend and replace the Nuclear Agreement Review Act, which contains what little framework there really is. There's no doubt the JCPOA or the Iran deal is a very bad deal. Here's a summary of why and some of the things he said. First, there are so many loopholes, sunset provisions, and blind spots in it that the Iranians can be, quote, in compliance with the deal by simply funding and working with the North Koreans on nuclear weapons and ICBMs. And he mentioned that. I've been screaming about that for 5 years. Wrote a book about it. And the idea that they can continue to do that under the current framework proves how bad it is. Second, there are no consequences for Iranian noncompliance. The so-called Obama snapback on sanctions was ludicrous right from the start. And the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, it's not the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. It's the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps created by Ayatollah Khomeini right after he came to power in 1979. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps bans the International Atomic Energy Agency from even inspecting Iranian military sites. That's all allowed under the so-called deal that Mr. Kerry negotiated. The Kerry deal also makes no mention of other Iranian bad behavior. So look, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, their Quds Force, is running amok, and the president listed them, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Bahrain, Yemen, Sudan, and the list goes on. The new sanctions on the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps announced today will help if Congress goes along with banning any company from any country that does any business with the IRGC. That has to happen. Call your congressman and make it happen. Finally, if there's anyone componentis in the Supreme Committee that runs it, all Ayatollahs, by the way, if there's any componentis, in other words, mental stability, it may actually work to the advantage of the five Americans who are being held hostage by the Iranian regime that the previous administration didn't even bother to mention. Well, they need to come home. And that needs to happen because the Congress will stand up and do what's right for a change. Yeah. Robert Levinson, missing for 10 years. Ziyun Wang, who is a Princeton graduate student, sentenced to 10 years for spying. The Samak family also jailed for the same kind of thing. Absolutely outrageous. President Trump is insisting that Congress get fully invested in what we do about Iran. The list of sanctions that he's asked for is based on bad behavior and failures to comply with a new agreement. It only makes sense. This is a man who knows how to close a deal. It's simple. His idea of a new agreement with Iran will prevent Iran, and I will use his word, from ever acquiring nuclear weapons or the means of delivering them. Ever. If we fail to do so, the proliferation of nuclear weapons will be explosive, and that's not a pun. There will be countries all over the globe who will acquire their own weapons because they're so afraid of what might happen with the Iranians and the North Koreans. It's important that the president continue to make the point that Iranian and North Korean nuclear weapons and ICBMs are an existential threat, meaning a clear and present danger to the United States, to our people, and to the world. I'll predict this. When you get to turn on the news tonight, on any other station but mine, my network, well, it's not really mine, Mr. Murdoch owns it, but I'll give you a prediction. The mainstream media tomorrow will claim that the president is acting rashly at best and irresponsibly and irrationally at worst. There are other national security issues that need to be addressed. North Korea is violating the toothless United Nations resolutions and threatening our homeland with nuclear weapons and ICBMs, irrefutable. Vladimir Putin's regime in Moscow has invaded neighbors and continues the Soviet practice of interfering and tampering in democratic elections. They've been doing it since 1920. They haven't stopped. China is intimidating its neighbors and escalating tensions in the South China Sea. And while ISIS will soon be driven from its last strongholds in western Iraq and Syria, as Congressman Frank Wolf mentioned just a few moments ago on this platform, radical Islam is not defeated, and we will have to be on guard against it for the rest of my life, Lord willing, a long time. What all this means is that whatever we do diplomatically and economically has to be backed up by a strong military. The only reason we have a military is to deter war and win one if we have to fight one. That's the only purpose of having it. So what does that mean to those of us who are people of faith? First, situational awareness demands that we help our president in rebuilding our armed forces. Here's our mission, if I can put it in those terms. 8 years of misfeasance, nonfeasance, and malfeasance in the previous administration have burned out the most valuable ingredient in a strong military. It's not just tanks and planes and ships. They can be built with money. Most importantly, we have to be able to continue to recruit, train, and equip the best, brightest, and bravest of the current generation. That's what we need in our military. How do we do this? There's three things that we can do. Number one, encourage military service. Each time I've been here before, I've put on the screen those that I've covered during this long war and 59 embeds. I'm going to save that for the next time I'm here because I'll have some more. What we need to do is continue to recruit those once wonderful young Americans who come from a strong Judeo-Christian background, because they're the ones that are going to have the courage to go up against a vicious, brutal, suicidal enemy, and they're the ones who can show Christian compassion when it's needed. Second, we all need to support members of Congress in both houses, both parties, who will support our troops. And last, we can pray for our country. We have to. A few years back, before I left on an embed overseas, Shirley Dobson called me up and asked me to write a prayer for the National Day of Prayer. And I said I would, and I did. But as the time came for that to be delivered back here in the States, I was rather heavily engaged with the U.S. military units in the Hindu Kush. I called home on my Iridium satellite phone, and I told Betsy, I said, I need you to call Shirley Dobson and tell her that I'm not going to make it home in time. And her answer was very straightforward. She said, I'm not going to do that. But if you do that, you had better stay in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever you are, because you'll be a lot safer there than when Jim Dobson gets a hold of you. You're going to learn a new meaning for dare to discipline. Guess what? I made it home in time. So if you would, because we are people of faith, I would ask you to join me in this prayer, the one I wrote for Jim and Shirley Dobson. Heavenly Father, Lord of lords and King of kings, we praise you and bow down before you and no other. Dear Lord, we thank you for the bounty beyond measure and the resources too vast to quantify that you have bestowed upon our fruitful land. We're grateful to live among the freest, most prosperous, diverse, and generous population on earth. Lord of all, we ask that you deliver us from our enemies, for your forgiveness for those things that we have done and that which we failed to do when we strayed from your word. We beseech you for godly, enlightened leaders, your guidance for our president, wisdom for our legislators, and judges who temper justice with mercy. We beg you for pastors who know your word, teachers who know your name, and parents who sing your praises to their children. Lord, give us the strength and perseverance to guard all our God-given liberties enshrined in our Bill of Rights. We appeal for your all-powerful protection for those who serve the cause of freedom. And let us be worthy of the sacrifices of all who don a uniform and serve in peril on land, sea, and in the air. And Heavenly Father, when our day is done, let it be said of us that we were a people who fought the good fight, finished the race, and kept the faith. And I ask all this in the name of your Son, my Savior, Jesus Christ. Thank you for having me here again.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch, and that was Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who spent 22 years in the United States Marine Corps. Hoorah! And he's always a wealth of information. All right, don't go away, because we're coming back with more when we hear from a panel of experts on national security. That's next here on Washington Watch.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication. In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us. And let me again say Happy New Year. All right, we'll continue now with our show's theme of national security. Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council and one of the original members of the U.S. Army's elite Delta Force, led a panel discussion at the Values Voter Summit, which included Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, and Kamal Saleem, a former Muslim and Muslim Brotherhood member who is now a born-again Christian. Let's listen.
We have two great Americans here with us today, one of which was not born in America, but he is as patriotic as anyone in this place today. Yeah, and it's not Frank Gaffney, so. So let me introduce them to you, and then we'll get started. Frank Gaffney is the founder and president and CEO of the Center for Security Policy, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan educational corporation established in 1988. Under President Ronald Reagan, Frank acted as the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy. He served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear Forces and Arms Control under Assistant Secretary Richard Perle. He hosts a Secure Freedom radio program daily. It's an hour-long program that reaches a very broad audience, and he is nationally syndicated. It airs every weeknight. His daily Secure Freedom Minute commentaries are heard on over 200 stations coast to coast. Frank Gaffney. Welcome, Frank Gaffney, to here. Our next guest, and also a very good friend of mine, is Kamal Saleem. And Kamal was born in the what you might say is the belly of the beast. He was born to a large Sunni Muslim family right in the heart of the Middle East and raised as a Muslim. I don't even need to read this thing. He was recruited to the Muslim Brotherhood at 7 years old and committed his first act of terrorism and supported the Muslim Brotherhood operations when he was just over 7 years old as he went into Israel. I strongly suggest that you get his autobiography this afternoon. He'll be signing books, Blood of the Lambs. He converted to Christianity in 1985, and it's an incredible story of how he was hurt in a very bad automobile accident out in the Midwest, and that ultimately brought him to a relationship with Jesus Christ. He runs a ministry today called Kumi
ministries, or Qum ministries, Arise. It's Arabic for arise. And he travels all over the world. First of all, he has a deep passion for reaching Muslims. But secondly, I've never seen anybody do a gospel presentation that was more passionate and more effective than the gospel presentation that Kamal Saleem gives. And many, many people see their lives changed as a result of his invitation to receive Christ. So he and I wrote a book together, so make sure you get that book out there because we do need your money. Okay? And now I'd like to go to Frank Gaffney and ask Frank to talk to us about the threats in today's world and what we are seeing happen in our world, and then we'll go to Kamal. And thank you, Frank. Thank you, John.
Hi. What a great privilege to be here. I'm going to move through with great speed. Some material that I'd like to share with you about specifically what I consider to be, based on what my old boss Ronald Reagan used to call, the existential threat of freedom of our generation. Everyone faces them. These guys have, in their own ways, been trying to, to varying degrees, help us understand the nature of that existential threat. They seem mostly to be talking about these sorts of people. There are many more besides, but these are sort of the bell ringers in the violent jihadist space. I want to talk mostly about this outfit that Kamal used to be associated with, the Muslim Brotherhood, which I believe is extraordinarily dangerous, as I'll share with you in a moment. You don't need to look a whole lot farther than their creed to see why that is. What all of these guys have, the violent guys, the so-called pre-violent or non-violent guys of the Muslim Brotherhood, have in common is Sharia. If I leave nothing with you but this, this is really the most important takeaway. Sharia is, I feel, predominant, and I apologize, the spacing on these are for Macs, not for IBMs, and that's what we've got in the back, so just bear with me. There's a patina of religiosity to it, to be sure, but fundamentally it is about political, military, and legal doctrines that govern the lives of all Muslims, the faithful ones at the very least. Why is that a problem? Well, while there are some Muslims that don't embrace, don't want to live under Sharia, don't want to impose it on the rest of us, unfortunately there are many, many millions who do. Indeed, they understand that this ideology, and that's really what it is the true faith of Islam. That's what the authorities of Islam say as well. But if we understand that that's what it is, we actually have laws that allow us to protect ourselves against it. If we do not understand that, however, if we allow the adherence to Sharia to insist that this is just their faith, this is just another religion that has to be protected like ours and other faiths in our country are under our Constitution, we're toast. So that's particularly true because what Sharia requires of all Muslims, all faithful Muslims, is that they must engage in jihad. And that is not, by the way, personal struggle. That has several very prominent features to it. The one that we're most familiar with, of course, since 9/11 is this one, the violent kind of jihad, the kind of jihad that 7-year-olds and lots of other Muslims are called to engage in. It's performed by groups, but it's also performed by individuals where they can't get a group together to do it. And it is devastatingly effective and terrifying and thereby encouraging submission. This is another form of jihad. It's been called refugee jihad or a kind of demographic jihad. You can have millions of Muslims coming from what they call the Dar al-Islam, the House of Islam, to where you live.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and we've got much more from the 2017 Values Voters Summit National Security Panel right after this. So don't go away. We're coming right back.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. If you want to keep up with me, well, you can do so on Twitter, at T. Perkins. And by the way, all of this, if you missed anything or you'd like to know more about the Family Research Council, go to TonyPerkins.com. There's links over to the Family Research Council as well as archived versions of Washington Watch, all right there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, so far in today's show, we've heard from retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who under the Reagan administration, 1983 to 1986, was in the National Security Council for counterterrorism programs and the founder of the Freedom Alliance, and experts discussing national security concerns and challenges. Let's now return to the National Security Panel. That includes Frank Gaffney with the Center for Security Policy and Kamal Shalim, who was born in Lebanon to a devout Muslim family. Now he is a Christian author and travels the country challenging Muslims to question their allegiance to Allah.
I want to draw your attention today to a current situation that's taking place in the Middle East, and it's going to affect the United States and affect the EU in whole. And I want to talk about Turkey and what's happening in Turkey today. This is a world new dominance, the rise of the Ottoman Empire, and how he is re-coordinating the efforts of Islamism, and he is converting everything back from what it is today, and there's a clash of civilization right now between Islam, the Muslim group, and so therefore I believe this is a great entrance for the United States of America to make policy to hold Iran and Turkey from advancing, and Iraq and all their remnant of, their goals and what so have you. So today, I want to take you with me to the PowerPoint. I want to show you something. This is from the Quran. This is from the Quran, Surah 14 and 24. And the Quran says, أَلَمْ تَرَى كَيْفَ فَعَلَ دَرْبَ اللَّهِ مَثَلًا كِالْكِتْمَانِ طَيُّبُ بَتَنْ And كَالشَّجَرَ طَيُّبَ أَصْلَهَا سَابَتْ وَفَرْعُهَا فِي السَّمَاءِ The Muslims in the Middle East, they look at this as this is very important to them, as the President Tayyip, his name is mentioned twice in the Quran. So they look at him as the awaited one. Since his name is mentioned in the Quran, and they see this right now, so they are rallying to bring about President Tayyip from Israel, where Hamas is calling for Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, to rise all the way to throughout the east of Europe. Tajikistan, Kurdistan, all those areas calling for the rise of Turkey. And so now we see the president of Turkey has risen the Ottoman Empire altar all over again. and he has declared the Ottoman Empire establishment all over from the beginning. Now we are seeing the move of the star and the crescent. This is the falling star, and this is the crescent that is mentioned in Isaiah 14, 13 through 17, for those who read the Bible. Erdogan just recently blackmailed Europe. And Europe, you know, Germany made a deal with him, and the deal was specifically, now they're giving him $3 billion in financial aid, and they're going to allow 78 million Turkish to enter the EU from end to end without a visa. So this is opening the immigration level into Europe like never before, and Europeans do not know what they have signed. This is all of it now is forward tracking and changing everything. By the way, look at the signature by the EUs. These are signed signatures to allow them to come about. In a recent OIC meeting, the summit that took place in Turkey, which is in Istanbul, this is a very important summit. That is the 13th. And what happened, Erdogan spoke, you know, Tayyip, he spoke about the new armies of Shia and Sunnis. Why would the Shia and Sunni unite together? Why they are the enemy of each other? This is very important. If you have to pay attention to this. Saudi Arabia is a Wahhabi. Erdogan is Salafite, Sufi. The Muslim Brotherhood are Sufi. Al-Qaeda is Wahhabi. So what happened, the uniqueness in all this too, is I will talk about it a little bit more in the next slide. What happened is the Sufis can and will unite the Shia and the Sunni. They believe in the united power of the two, while the Wahhabi do not believe in this. Now, he demanded for the seats on the UN, for the all the Muslim nation, the OIC. The OIC is Islamic Organization, Islamic Conference, and that is where the Muslim 57 nations sits on in the United Nations, trying to control the United Nations. Now they're asking for a seat on the UN Council. Then the second one is he's declaring a war on as an Islamophobic war against the West, and he's calling for hate crime. This is you. This is you. And what Frank talked about, if we don't fight this agenda, the Muslim Brotherhood, they are not going to be taken down. Because today we are not fighting airplanes, we are fighting people with suits. And we are fighting an ideology. These people, their ideology, 86% of the Islamic ideology, which is Sharia, it is political. And the war they are fighting in the United States of America is political. The other part is they are declaring war on the Christians and Jews. This is what he talked in OIC. The enemy is in front of us, which is, that's what Muhammad says. They are the Christian and Jews, so, and he's declaring war on the West. The other thing, he is declaring war on the Christian minorities. He is declaring war on the Christian minorities that they are there in Turkey. And what happened is, we'll talk about this, and then the Kurds. He's calling for holy war against the Kurds. This man is looking forward to sabotage the Kurds, so the ground will be open before him from Iraq, Iran and Iraq, all the way through Syria, all the way to Lebanon and the Golan Heights, and to go to Israel immediately.
When we return, more from the National Security Panel that addressed the 2017 Values Voters Summit. That's next. Don't go away.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose: to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. What's more dangerous than fake news? Fake science. We should be able to rely on the unbiased facts of science for some of the biggest decisions of our lives: our health, our education, the well-being of our families. However, the political left has manipulated so many of these facts to advance their agenda and shut down debate that we are living in a world informed by fake science. In his explosive new book, Fake Science: Exposing the Left's Skewed Statistics, Fuzzy Facts, and Dodgy Data, author Austin Roos punctures the so-called facts used by the left and reveals how poorly their version of data measures up to the actual science. In numerous cases where the science is really settled, such as when the facts of biology tell us that sex is determined by our chromosomes rather than our feelings, or that a new human life begins at conception, suddenly the left isn't so enthusiastic. Go to frc.org/speakers to hear Austin talk about his new book and the real truth about fake science. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you'd like to find out more about Washington Watch and the Family Research Council, just go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's return now to the National Security Panel held at the 2017 Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. Frank Gaffney, founder, Center for Security Policy, and Kamal Shalim was born in Lebanon, as I mentioned, to a devout Muslim family. He is now a Christian author and travels the country, challenging Muslims to question their allegiance to Allah.
In Islamic leadership, under Erdogan, the Muslim Brotherhood now, the headquarters of the Muslim Brotherhood, has moved all the way from Egypt to Turkey. Why? Because Turkey is calling for the tri-power. What is the tri-power? Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. That's the rise of the Ottoman Empire. And where is that mentioned? Our previous administration, they referred to it as the Levant. This is very important. He want to reestablish the Levant, which is take over the Middle East, and establish Turkey Ottoman Empire proper. And then he want to take that further. Now that the chief general, the Iranian army general have moved, Turkey, and he met with Erdogan, and now they are uniting the two army together. The Sufi believes believe that the Iranian and the Turkish, which is Sunni and Shia, be united together, what happened? That will have to destroy Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, UAE, Oman, all will have to be destroyed because they're Wahhabi. Why? Because the leadership of the Sunni is under them today. And by making this, what happened? The house of Hijaz, where Muhammad was born, will have to be destroyed and will have to move to the bloodline of whom? Al-Fatimiyin. Who are these people? That they are the bloodline of Muhammad, which is Iran proper. So by doing so, he is calling an OIC for new leadership. And he's asking for himself to be seated to lead into this. And the Iranians are coming with this. And the new army will be the Revolutionary Army, which is our president, declare that they are a terrorist organization. And Iran declared if he will do this, they will have to hit America.
And then we're going to see Hezbollah and Bashar Assad army coming together. And then we see under the Turkish, we're going to see the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and the PLO rising together. All this is coming together to pain the Western civilization. And with this, I'm going to stop, but this is the reference. If anybody want to hear about what I spoke, you can verify it right there. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kamal and Frank. And now I'm going to ask you some questions, and I'll ask you to remain there where you're seated and answer these questions. And let me start with you, Frank. One of the things that you didn't really talk about is, under the Trump administration, do we still have people that are associated with the Muslim Brotherhood inside our government?
Jerry, I think it's an incredibly important question. And as I say, this is what they've declared is their objective. We saw considerable numbers of folks who were either actually tied into the Muslim Brotherhood, usually through front organizations like the Council on American-Islamic Relations, with the Obama administration. And one of the course corrections that I think wound up making Donald Trump president of the United States is he said we're not going to be doing that sort of thing, right? Unfortunately, I think there are still people who have those kinds of ties, as well as people who are simply sympathetic to them, who share that agenda of raising up the Muslim Brotherhood, something that, by the way, Barack Obama explicitly endorsed on the eve of the so-called Arab Spring with something called Presidential Study Directive 11, still classified but clearly a charter for the U.S. to help the Muslim Brotherhood take power. Let me just give you one example of how it's working in the Trump administration. You may find this shocking. Honestly, I do. The man working under a very problematic national security advisor by the name of H.R. McMaster on counterterrorism at the National Security Council is named Mustafa Javed Ali. Now, a telltale as to whether that's a problem or not was he was told that the National Security Council needed to get a briefing from Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Many of you may know her, an extraordinary woman out of Somalia, now essentially under 24-hour protection because of what she said in opposition to Sharia. Mustafa Javed Ali refused to allow her to brief the National Security Council unless she were accompanied by a representative of the Council on American-Islamic Relations to counteract her testimony. A clue.
Thank you, Frank. Kamal, let me go to you. Something that I think we're all a little interested in as we reflect back to last summer, and there was a coup in Turkey. Was that a legitimate coup, or do you have any information that might indicate that Erdogan staged that coup?
You're absolutely right. The coup is staged. The whole coup, you know, Erdogan did not get up there by his own power. There is a gentleman by name, his Fethullah, or Fethullah, as the Turkish will call him, and his second name is Gulen. Fethullah Gulen, he is a multi-billionaire businessman. And he has at least about 18 to 23 million followers in Turkey. And so therefore, his infiltration to the Turkish government was very unique. The way he moved into the whole civilization, he moved through the rank of political rank, you know, through the Senate, through all this, through the professorship, and also he moved into the general system and the police. So he controlled the entire Turkish government by his influence. And so therefore, in his system, worked like a terrorist program. And how does it work? He has couple imam under him, and each imam has a sector under him, and each imam will speak to different group of imams, and these imams will release it, you know, each group will release it to the other one, so it goes up and down with this. So Erdogan was helped by Fathullah, you know, Gulen, and he won the power for himself, because Fathullah Gulen was called the awaited one, he was called the Mahdi, and they were waiting for this, but he knew that he won that title, and the only way to take this title is to take it, to take his nation back. So he stepped outside of Turkey, and he set this coup in place to destroy Fathullah and his generals. As they stepped outside, the professors, the generals, the police, the doctors, all these people, they were arrested, and many of them were slaughtered. And we don't know about this. This is how it happened, and then he took his nation. Now he owns the title.
Thank you, and just let me add one commentary here. I was talking to a Turk who sees exactly what's going on in Turkey. He is he's now living in the United States, but he said, go back and look at the previous coups in Turkey, and there have been a number of them. And he said, what time did they start? Well, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, what time did this coup start? It was about 8 o'clock at night when people were still out on the streets, which was a clear indicator that it was not a legitimate coup planned by a professional group like the military there. So thank you, Kamal, for that. Frank, let me go to you. Something that's a big issue for all of the people in this room here today. What are the Muslims doing with regards to the Christian church? And both of you just touched on that, but let's take a couple of minutes here and talk in a little more depth. What's happening to the Christians?
Well, there are Christians in the Middle East. There are Christians in Africa. There are Christians in the Far East and other parts of the world who are increasingly at risk or actually being subjected to genocide. Even John Kerry finally came around to declaring that to be the case. This has been going on for years. Unfortunately, it has been a chronic problem for not only people in those parts of the world, but so many others. And this is something that has been deeply frustrating, I think, to all of us who have been watching it play out, mostly unchecked. And that is that while there are lots of people, in particular here in the United States, and working with others in these various regions, trying to help the people now being, in some cases, raped, crucified, brutalized. Kamal talked about churches being taken over or torched or simply murdered outright, sold into slavery, you name it. What we've not had to this point is critical mass in terms of standing against this, even calling it out, really. So I just wanted to mention, I don't know if the folks in the back can throw up the last slide that I had, but I wanted to just mention this. You may remember, some of you at least, there was a time when a campaign was mounted to promote the cause of Soviet Jewry by Jewish synagogues and temples across America. And one of its hallmarks was that a campaign was mounted to put outside of those places of worship banners or billboards or what have you, saying, "Save Soviet Jewry." And though a lot of people were confused about what was wrong with Soviet jewelry, it turns out that it turned into an opportunity to talk about a problem. People who were being subjected to horrific treatment at the hands of the Soviet Union, and my old boss, Scoop Jackson, helped actually get them released by taking that campaign and turning it into legislative action on most favored nation status for the Soviet Union. We've come up with a suggestion to all of those who are working in this space and all of those who feel that something must be done to try to prevent what's been going on for too long, but to stop it at last. By getting a similar kind of campaign on behalf of the persecuted church. And my friend and colleague Kelly Kohlberg is up here. If you're interested in knowing more about this, how you could get a banner like this that you could have outside your church, or for that matter outside your home, to help raise awareness and to help those who are pulling together to fight this affliction, this scourge, please see Kelly or me or General Boykin or others of us who are very much concerned about saving the persecuted church.
Right now, yesterday our president said he was going to decertify the Iranian nuclear deal. There are people still in this country that say we lived with a nuclear-armed Russia and a nuclear-armed China. Why can't we live with a nuclear-armed Iran? And they don't understand the idea behind the Shia 12er theology, which could compel them to actually use a nuclear weapon. Could you briefly explain what that theology says?
Yes. The 12th Imamith, you know, the theology in Iran for the Shia is the Mahdi when he is introduced. And when we say the Mahdi, many people must understand he's not just the caliph. He is the image of the Messiah. And when he comes in, he will unite all the Muslim nations together. The hadith by Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, he said in his traditions, he said, the days of Islam will not come about until the Muslim arise. The arising of the Muslim is holy war, because the Muslim could not live their life by peace, because the only way they can prove their life to go to paradise is to kill and be killed, according to the teaching of the Quran and the hadith and seerah. So therefore, by this rising, and now we see Turkey has made a deal with Russia for long-range missile, short-range missile, and if Iran obtained the nukes, we are in deep trouble, because Saudi Arabia will be sent home before time, and we're going to see the whole thing lit up. And who to say if they can stand outside our seashore as just a business, you know, business ship, and they shoot their range missiles from there to the United States of America. They have said it, and they have said it they're going to destroy America. It's time to believe them, because it's mandatory to fulfill it.
And let me finish up by saying a Shia 12er believes that this Mahdi or Messiah will not return until the world is in an atmosphere of bloodshed and chaos. Is there any better way to create bloodshed and chaos than for Iran to use a nuclear weapon on Israel, which would then bring back the Messiah? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. It has been a privilege being with you, and let's thank our panelists here.
Well, friends, that does it for this edition of Washington Watch. So thankful that you tuned in today. And let me again wish you a blessed 2018. And I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 7234.